On the phone with me, calling in from Kentucky today, we're talking with composer and pianist Rachel Grimes, who will be performing at the Big Ears Festival on Sunday, March the 26th at the Bijou Theater. Now, Rachel, you've performed at this festival at least a couple of times. I think what might make this unique is you are debuting a brand new work this Sunday, right?
Yeah, that felt like a great idea last summer. And now it feels pretty terrifying, but yes, I'm bringing a brand new song cycle, which is kind of unusual for me. Most of my music to this point has been instrumental, and when I've written for voice or voices, sometimes it's for like a choir or a, you know, an a cappella choir, which there is a little bit of in this work, but these are many songs for singing and for solo voice and for some group singing and string trio with guitar and banjo and piano. And then there's also a narrator. So there's actually a ton of text. I guess I'm making up for lost time.
Yeah, and it's called The Way Forth. What inspired the work?
Well, The Way Forth is kind of a play on the Wilderness Trace, or the Wilderness Trail, as it is called, which is the original pioneer road carved by white settlers in the mid-1700s up from not far from where you are at the moment in, you know, in northeastern Tennessee up through the Cumberland Gap. And the reason I've chosen that title or working with that idea is because almost all of my family, on both my mom's and my dad's sides, going back in some cases 8 or 9 generations, have lived in Madison and Lincoln counties in Kentucky, which are sort of central Kentucky, or they came from Virginia over the, you know, over the mountains and through that gap or Big Stone Gap into those areas. And I've just been learning a lot about both of my parents' families over the last few years because I've taken in a lot of their photographs and documents and papers and gotten to know a lot more details. My cousins and I have gotten together to share stories and look at pictures, and it just seems like this whole huge number of stories from the past is coming alive through both sharing these with family members and then asking my parents questions. So it just seemed to take a hold of me about a year and a half ago. It seemed obvious that some songs were sort of emerging from this pretty moving experience of looking at all these very old photographs and papers and things.
Have you found anything really surprising as you dig in to this family history?
So many things. And I've tried to weave as many of the interesting ones, you know, the ones that seem like a fun narrative or a little bit of a mystery, into this piece. Some things weren't really surprising, I guess, but they were confirmed. Things like some of my family, like in the late 1700s and early 1800s, owned slaves, and that was confirmed with things like a bill of sale for the purchase of a woman and her 3 children, Susan, the mother, and her 3 children, Anne, Jane, and Henson. And, you know, when you look at something like a document for the purchase of people, It's just a very powerful and, you know, almost stunning feeling. And I didn't exactly think, oh, this would be a great song. You know, it just became something essential to the story, something specific that I could get at, especially because it was a woman with her 3 children that just is such a stirring and emotionally painful idea. And there's, you know, here are these very specific people and this moment in time that this happened. So it's not terribly surprising, given that I live in Kentucky, that people in my family owned slaves. But putting names and a place and a date, you know, is very stirring. Lots of other great things, like, you know, where everybody specifically came from in Virginia, finding a long ago relative, that actually finding the paperwork from his passage over the ocean from Bavaria on a ship from Rotterdam called the Hope of Rotterdam. And he was an indentured servant. You know, he came here, spent 4 years working on a farm in Virginia, and as soon as he could get out of there and save up a teeny bit of money, he went over the mountains and came into Kentucky. You know, I think that's the story of so many people in that era. That would have been, you know, mid to late 1700s. But I love reading the specifics. I mean, there are lots of surprises. I kept expecting to find out that somehow members of my dad's or my mom's family had they had married before, but actually they haven't. I haven't seemed to uncover that one yet.
Yeah.
So far as I know, I'm not inbred. But everybody, you know, lived in a very small area, and that kind of has made things fun and rich for me because I can really dig into this very specific geographical location that I know really well because I spent a lot of time in my childhood visiting there, too. So I've done a lot more research as a result of all of this, trying to write more about the origins, but also just trying to shine some light on what the kinds of versions of the stories that were told when I was little, you know, were those of the heroes, the great heroes, Daniel Boone and so forth, you know, and what brave and wonderful things they did for us. And, you know, there were a lot of people and I would say truths left out of that version, such as what were the women doing and how did they feel about this? And were there other people that were helping to forge a path, build a fort, and that would be the slaves. You know, the women and the slaves had no voice in the telling of the history of the settlement of this area. And moreover, the people that had lived here for thousands of years definitely did not have a voice in those stories, other than being, you know, the savages that were constantly attacking these brave pioneers. You know, and I guess for some of us, like reading, like where we stand now, it's like this is a really distorted version of the story. I mean, you know, these white people came in to their territory. You know, it's often told in a reverse way, as if the original Kentucky and Virginia settlers, you know, came here first, and then how dare these Indians come and try to, you know, get that land from them? But you know, it's really the opposite, and this kind of weird duplicitous way of presenting history, and you know, as it was presented to me as a child, you know, it's just something I felt like taking on, for better or for worse. You know, it's ugly, and I feel like we're just dealing with this in many ways these days in our society, but it's time we talk about the complicated story and not, you know, not the simple story.
Do you feel like, in a sense, as you dig through all of this, that you feel that, in a way, we as a nation have not atoned properly for things like slavery and the treatment of the Native Americans and women?
Oh, yes. I think we're even barely just beginning. One of the things that strikes me over and over as I'm looking through very personal papers from my family is that, from a certain point of view, this just isn't very much time. You know, 300 years feels like a lot of time, or 250 years feels like a lot of time when you sit here today and think about it. But really, in terms of how history and culture and societies develop, that's not a lot of time. And I feel like we are just seeing the effects of this cultural, you know, invasion on this country now. You know, we're really... We've had different phases of dealing with it in our history. We've had many, many wars. We've had our own civil war, and it feels as though we might be having another one now. You know, but it's really just a short amount of time as far as history goes, and I feel like we are only beginning to deal with it. I don't know if we're even close to atonement. We're just starting to really talk about how truly wrong and just unforgivable some of the actions of our ancestors and our government have been toward people who are living here for millennia, toward people who were stolen from other continents and forced to build the riches and wealth for a very few.
These are huge questions and very, I mean, it certainly would have been easier to find out some of this information and go, hey, I'm not going to share that one.
Sure.
but in fact, you have chosen to dig right in the middle of it. How difficult has it been to tackle these huge questions in this piece to accurately get across what you want to say musically, lyrically, etc.?
Well, it's been really painful, and really, I mean, I question every day I've worked on this why I'm doing it, you know, as I often do with any kind of music project. What's driving this? What I would say at the very foremost of this project is that I have somehow known about these complex, duplicitous, crazy truths my whole life. There's something didn't add up when I was a kid. You know, why? And some of it has to do with church. Some of it has to do with the culture of the patriarchy, the way stories were told, what I perceived to be my grandmother's or my mother's interpretations of the same stories. You know, you always feel like you get a different little add-on, a little addendum when you're in the kitchen and you're listening to the story through your grandmother's little, you know, smirks and raised eyebrows than you get when you're sitting in the living room listening to your grandfather directly. And I'm talking about me, you know. I think what it comes down to is I feel like women, the thread for this song cycle is the woman's voice. Women were oppressed by the system, by the men, by other women in some cases, you know, through this whole last 300-year chapter. And so how did they deal with that oppression on a daily basis? You know, of course, they weren't allowed, they were property, they weren't allowed to own property. Their choices in life kind of added up to one of three, you know, given on a given day, and being a mother, being responsible for a certain expectation of domestic responsibility was a given. You know, having your own work was really just a rarity until the 20th century.
So your performance of The Way Forth will be Sunday, March the 26th at noon at the Bijou
Yes.
Theater. So can you fill us in on who will be performing with you and what roles they'll be taking?
Sure. I'm so excited to bring my friend Steven Weber from New York. He's with the City Company. He's an actor and a singer. And so he'll be leading us through a lot of the narration, and he'll sing on the group songs. The main voice in this piece is the lovely Joan Shelley, who will also be at Big Ears. She's performing with Nathan Salzberg on guitar on Saturday evening, I think. And then the two of them both will be joining us for The Way Forth. Then I'll have a string trio from here in Louisville, Scott Moore on violin, who's been with me at Big Ears before, and Charlie Patton on cello and Aaron May on bass.
Composer and pianist Rachel Grimes, her new work is The Way Forth. Here is a little bit of an audio sample from a recent rehearsal. For WUOT, I'm Todd Steed.